We're going to take a little look internally as we look outside. It's the in and out, the yin and yang. It's about memento mori as well. This is Father Vazgen. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting dots and looking at life through the most ancient of all Christian fabrics, namely Armenian Orthodoxy. This is episode number 596 of The Next Step. We invite you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting, The Next Step with Father Vazgen. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Vazgen brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Memento mori. Quick. What? Memento mori. Quick, get out your Latin dictionary. No, you don't have one. How about your textbook from high school? Latin. Did you take Latin in high school? I'm showing my age, aren't I? Of course, we don't need any of that. We have Google. Keypad. We don't even need a keypad. I forgot. We could just ask. We can use the A word. Yeah. No. I won't say it. If I say Alexa. It might, too late. It's all right. Okay, I'll go for it. Alexa, what does memento mori mean?
Memento mori is usually defined as, remember that you must die. For more, ask me to give you more definitions for memento mori.
No. That won't be necessary. Actually, that was a very nicely done. Yeah, very nicely done. Memento mori. Actually, I read this in a book. Let me read this to you. In ancient Rome, when a victorious general paraded through the streets, legend has it that he sometimes was trailed by a servant whose job it was to repeat to him, "Memento mori," remember, you will die. Okay, if this is one of your first next steps, okay, it's, I'm not into this morbid kind of thing, and I don't mean to bring anybody down, okay? Just bear with me for a few minutes. I know it's not the way to start off today's show, but it's important. There is a connection here. And I'd be very interested, when I said, Alexa, when I said that, did it trigger off the machines next to you? I'm just wondering. Of course, if you're listening on the earbuds, probably not, unless you have the latest Alexa, which is connected somewhere in your tooth, right? Is that? No, that hasn't happened yet. I know. We get accused of being way ahead of the times. Sorry, I gave away what we're up to. But anyway, we start off with this because I read this out of Steve Jobs's biography by Walter Isaacson. There's two books that really touched me. This last few months I've been reading. One of them was The Gambler, the story of Kirk Krikorian. I highly recommend both of these books. Highly recommend both of them. And yeah, okay. I will definitely put a link on the show notes today to both of them. And then the other one is probably very, very popular a couple of years ago when it came out. But I just got around to reading it. Walter Isaacson's Steve Jobs biography. And it's especially, it especially moves me because not only is the story fascinating, Steve Jobs' entire, this genius and what he created, but for me, I had a very unique connection to that entire area, having served at my first parish in the Silicon Valley. And we arrived in Silicon Valley in 1982, right at the start of when personal computing became popular. It was still kind of like a freaky kind of thing. You know, I was there when VisiCalc, the precursor to Excel, came about. And we used to actually use VisiCalc on a very primitive machine down in the old Apples when you compare it to what we have today in Excel. But basically the idea was there. Actually, the primitive machine that I used it on was called a Timex Sinclair computer. And we'd load VisiCalc vis-a-vis a cassette recorder. It was magnetic tape. Used to keep it. Anyway, I digress like I always do, but I've been told that people like that digression, so I will do it. Anyway, I read this in Steve Jobs's biography, and Isaacson draws this parallel, and he does it rightly so. Steve Jobs, he's the genius who changed the way we look at life, the way we understand life. Remember that little phrase I'm using, the way we understand, what is that? That's basically cosmology, right? The way we understand the universe. Well, think about it in terms of our everyday experience, how we deal with the world. Of course, Steve Jobs, the genius who gave us, who made personal computing possible. Would it have happened without him? Probably it eventually would have come, but he got accelerated. And with the advent of the Apple II between him and Wozniak, and then in the evolution of the Macintosh, of the graphic user interface, and because of that, and the Windows platform went wild. The word itself, Windows, right? It was is a reaction to the Macintosh, and then the evolution of the iPods, iPads, and eventually leading to the iPhone, which changed the way we communicate with one another. Social media. If you haven't gotten a chance to see our latest video, it is in Armenian language, but it's called Ushatrutyan Getron. Check it out. We'll put a link on today's show notes. Check it out. We talk about the social media and how it's affecting us within the church. But church is such a small part of the entire equation. And these things that we take for granted, the means of communication that we have today, was all because here was a man who was able to push his limits and to really exploit his creativity, something we talk about here on The Next Step many times, one of the foundations of Armadoxy too. It's not about a negative reality, about a list of don't do this. Rather, the Christianity and understanding in Armadoxy is do this. In other words, God has given you that life. Take advantage of it. And certainly we saw that in this solitary life. And this parallel that the author of his biography, Isaacson, makes. In other words, remember you will die. Momento mori. That it's going to end. And it's an important parallel because it's something that Jobs had to face, right? He realizes he has cancer. He has an opportunity to overcome that cancer. He chooses another way and so on and so on. We know eventually he succumbed to that illness in 2011. But imagine when you know that your time. We all know momento mori. We all know that our life is finite, that there will come a time when we close our eyes for the last time. But imagine when you have that that's staring you right in the face, that it's coming up quicker than you might want it to. How about that? Is that the best way to say it? Quicker than you might expect? Well, yeah, that goes for everybody. But in Jobs' case, quicker than he might have wanted to. And then dealing with it. And interesting, right after he was diagnosed, let me read from the biography. It says one of his first calls was to Larry Brilliant, who he first met at ashram in India. Calls him and says, "Do you still believe in God?" Jobs asked him. Brilliant said that he did, and they discussed the many paths to God that had been taught by the Hindu guru Neem Karoli Baba. Then Brilliant asked Jobs what was wrong, and he said, "I have cancer." Now, you know, there's a statement that was very popular during the wars. There are no atheists in foxholes. Here it is. I just read it. There are no atheists in foxholes. Foxholes, are these areas you get into as you're shooting the enemy. When you realize that life is finite and it can be taken from you any moment, your awareness of life and how to spend it is heightened, and you have this opportunity to really push yourself if you do. And as I read these words about Memento Mori, I just thought that isn't this the same thing what Jesus really wanted us to engage with, to understand that it's not all about the material wealth that we accumulate in this world. It's not about, you know, whoever dies with the most toys wins. It's understanding that, yeah, if you die with the most toys, you still die, you know? But what are you going to do at the end when you have to be able to deal with your life? What did you do with the life that God has given you? And this is a recurring theme in Christianity, which we fail to notice. If you look at the last few weeks, we've been talking about this. One of the biggest hang-ups of Christianity is that it has latched on to this idea that it's about a future life. And we talk about, well, what is to come? And so much of Christianity that we see, popular Christianity, is about this worry about tomorrow, what tomorrow will bring. And it doesn't, you know, all you need is one night of a little bit of insomnia and go through your television channels, go through your YouTube videos, poke in religion. I mean, it is wild out there. People aren't talking about the Good Samaritan. They're not talking about doing good and loving and having care and compassion and building more hospitals and taking down walls and helping out refugees. No, they're talking about what's going to happen in the end. And when Jesus returns, who will get saved? Who will not be saved? I mean, it's remarkable. That's not what Jesus talked about. Was that a part of his ministry? It could have been. Yeah, according to the writings that we have, according to what we've been taught, but a very bigger part was about our engaging with life right now. Realizing that momento mori, there is going to come a time when you have to be able to give an accounting. And this has been one of, you know, when I look at my life, when we started off the ministry 37, 38 years ago, actually 40 years ago, considering that, you know, I was a deacon and we served the church 37 years as a priest. You know, there's different stages that we've gone through. At the beginning, it was this idea that we didn't want to just have a church that was available Sunday only. Jesus was not a Sunday only priest. Jesus was somebody who interacted on a day-to-day basis. And I so much wanted to make the church something that was real in our lives, that was relevant to our lives today. And that's why I got into the church. That was originally what pushed me into it. I saw this beautiful Armenian church with all of its rich traditions that had been cut down just 50 years earlier. In a genocide, I saw this church that unless we took care of, it was going to be lost from the earth. And hey, wasn't that the goal of what the Ottoman Empire wanted to do when they orchestrated genocide? It was to get rid of Armenians, their culture and everything that they had, including their most vital asset, namely their faith. But they couldn't do it. And out of those ruins, there's this remnant. There's this small little church that exists against all the odds, and it's there. And I thought to myself, hey, you know, we gotta serve this church. Nobody else is going to. It's been given to us. And that was really the basis of my call. That was the calling that I got. Serve this church. Serve the Lord with gladness, as the psalmist said. And I came in with that idea that we needed to make it relevant for the day. And sadly, you know, as the years went by and you get involved in parish life and you deal with the reality of the numbers and the people who do not share that vision, you realize what a difficult challenge you're up against in not bringing people to faith, bringing people to that openness, to understand that faith is accessible, that there are ways. Like, for instance, you go into church today, you go into any mainstream church, but I'll talk out of the Armenian tradition. You can verify this. Just try it. If you go to an Armenian church, just try this out. You know, you go to a meeting, and what's the first thing they talk about? It's about fundraising. Now, hold on. Wait. Before you go, oh, yeah, Father Voskin, you know, you need funds. Yeah, I admit that. You need funds to run a church. But how do you go about getting those funds? Have you ever thought about that? We talk about outreach. We talk about helping others. Have you ever thought that if we did our job as a church by reaching out to others, the money would come in because people would then understand that you have a value? And every parish that I've been in every circumstance that I've been in, I've never gone out and asked people for money for a cause that I couldn't justify. In other words, people saw the goodness that was there. And this is one of the beautiful things I find in Armenian churches, is that when you do the right thing, people will honor that by supporting that. And what we see mostly, you go into churches, and it's not about outreach, it's about inreach. Let's find ways of raising money. Well, that in itself is a defeatist attitude, right? What do you mean, let's go find ways of... That's not your goal. That's not your purpose. So because it's not part of the mission statement, you can't do it effectively. So you go out there and you say, okay, we're going to have a fundraiser. We're going to have a banquet. Hey, banquet. Okay. We're going to have a picnic. Yay, picnic. We're going to have a raffle. Oh, yeah. Well, what are you raffling? Well, how about cash? That's always good. We can make a raffle and raffle off cash. Well, you know, people might get the wrong idea. How about if we raffle off a car? How about some big ones like a house? Ooh, then we can make the stakes higher. And now all of a sudden you're wrapped up in this discussion rather than talking about what was your ministry about. And so at the early point in my ministry, I realized that, hey, we needed to be about outreach. And I realized that the more we did it, the more isolated we became. Yes, we were a church doing it, but the rest of the church wasn't coming along. So how do you make that change? And I remember struggling with this with my dear friend Harach. We started a publication called Window from 1990 to 1995. And the entire idea was not to effectuate change from the outside, but we firmly believed that you needed to do it from the inside. And that entire Window publication for 5 years we published. I mean, it was kind of an interesting experiment because it was a publication that we started off with a goal of having an end. In other words, we weren't there forever. We wanted to make a publication that could look at life, and we set ourselves a goal of 5 years, and we did it. Remarkably, coincidentally, or maybe by divine providence, those 5 years turned out to be the most incredible 5 years in the life of the Armenian Church in the 20th century, certainly up until now, since the beginning of the 20th century. Yeah, 1990 to 1995, communism ended. Echmiadzin was in a free Armenia. His Holiness Vazgen I, one of the longest reigning Catholicoi, passed away. The Catholicos from the House of Cilicia came to Echmiadzin and became the Catholicos of all Armenians. We saw the crumbling of the Soviet Union, which brought cults. We saw a liberation theology with what was going on in Karabakh. I mean, amazing, amazing 5 years. And it's been documented in the Window. And we were there. But we weren't able to make that changed because we realized that, you know, there is a leadership. There is a hierarchy. And this is one of the reasons why at the end of every one of our next steps, we do that little disclaimer. Because we learn from Window, and we had the disclaimer in Window too, that, you know, that not everyone's going to agree with this. And we were respectful that this is my opinion, okay? And, you know, God bless them. We have bishops, we have Catholicoi who have their direction. And at the end of the day, I'm not a bishop. I'm not a Catholicos. And so we have our order. We have our structure within the church. I choose this ministry to work out this ministry within that order. So you're obedient. You understand that there is that structure. But still, it's the fire in you. So somewhere along the way, I understood that I needed to accept. Lord, grant me the wisdom to know the difference, says Reinhold Niebuhr in that very important serenity prayer. Give me the wisdom to change the things that I can. Give me the patience to live with the things that I can't, and the knowledge to know the difference. I probably slaughtered that prayer in my paraphrasing of it, but you get the idea. It's a Reinhold Niebuhr, I believe, that was done in the early days of the AA movement, if I'm not mistaken. But I came to that prayer in my college days. It's a beautiful, beautiful prayer. It's called the Serenity Prayer. And later in life, I realized that at some point you need to, okay, accept it. And do yourself. It's not to change your way, but you believe in that. You believe in what you're doing. Follow your heart. Do it. And so all of a sudden we saw that we evolved. And in that evolutionary process, we came up with Armodoxy. What is the Armenian church faith without all the hoopla? Right? Can we find the essence of the faith? And the premise here is really Armodoxy is mysticism, a mystical way of putting our life together, how we function. Remember a few minutes ago I said, remember that phrase? Well, what was I talking about? It's the cosmology, how things work, why we're here, what's going on. And that's basically, Armodoxy is our cosmology. That's what it is, right? I mean, you define how your universe came to be, and because of that, you understand what your place is within that universe. You understand the expressions that you have. You understand your functioning, your purpose, and so on. Armodoxy. Yeah. It's that simple. And so you accept the things you cannot change, but then you're up against a very big problem. You want to wait with me and confront that problem together? All right, let's take a break right now, okay? And do the song of the day. Cosmology is big, so why don't we go over to the classics today? We'll go with Alan Hovhaness. We haven't played him in a long, long time, okay? This is called Harutyun, or Resurrection, aria and fugue for trumpet and strings, or piano in this case. This is off of his prayer of St. Gregory the Illuminator, Alan Hovhaness.
Thank you.
Alan Hovhaness. Beautiful. Beautiful, touching, tender, right? Touches you? I hope so. Alan Hovhaness. This is off of a collection, Prayer of St. Gregory, Opus 62, Symphony No. 6. This particular piece is called Harotune, or Resurrection, Aria and Fugue for Trumpet and Strings. There'll be a link on today's show notes, and I hope it puts you in a nice meditative moment as we continue what we've been talking about our cosmology, about Momento Mori. Alexa, what is the Serenity Prayer?
The Serenity Prayer is the common name for a prayer written by the American theologian Reinhold Niebuhr.
Alexa, say the Serenity Prayer.
Serenity Prayer is, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you. I could get used to this. Yeah. Now I'm thanking an inanimate object. Well, we had her pray, right? Did you notice that I didn't say pray the prayer? I won't mention her name because she starts lighting up over here. Anyway, I said say the prayer because that's what it is. You're not praying it. You're an inanimate object, although they do have character, don't they? But there you have it. Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change. And that's where we left off. I told you, we get into a dilemma. We have a problem once we start accepting. We confront the problem of acceptance. And that's where I want to start this second portion of today's podcast. Okay, so in life, in certain circumstances, and definitely in industry, in the secular world, you have all this. You have a dog-eat-dog world, as we so call it, in industry, in just about every profession. But somehow in the church, we did not expect to find that, right? There was a purity that we were looking for. But in the end, what is the purpose of any organization, whether it's religious or secular? What is the purpose? And this one, a very wise man told me. His name was Onniga. He was a professor, and I have a lot of respect for him, and primarily because he was one who really called the shots early in my life, and I didn't believe him. Well, I shouldn't say this. I didn't understand him until later on. And he said that all institutions, I think he was a sociologist by background, he said, all institutions have one primary purpose. Because I was saying that, okay, the church, the purpose of the church is to speak about the kingdom of heaven, is to continue the ministry of Jesus Christ. And he said, but once you get into the institution, they have only one purpose, self-perpetuation. I didn't understand this. I really didn't until way later. And I think it clicked for me when I was doing my chaplaincy. I was a chaplain over at USC for the Armenian Student Association during the, let's see, what would that be, 2004? No, even earlier than that, excuse me, 1998 to about 2008, about 10 years, yeah. I was the chaplain there, and it clicked because we had opportunities to meet with different personnel, with professors, but it was at a meeting with the president of the university. We had lunch with him one day, and that's when it clicked, when I realized that this man, you know, he's the president of the entire university, and what is he talking to us about fundraising for self-perpetuation, so that the university can be there 100 years, 200, 300 years from now. and you think about it in terms of organizations, what's the main reason for any organization, including the church, the institution? Yes, to perpetuate itself so that the church can be there. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying there's anything bad about it, but let's get our minds off of the idea that there's something pure, because here we have our disappointment, as I shared with you a few minutes ago, right? Because for me, if this is truly the holy body of Christ, and it is immaculate, it is pure, it should be above, it should be beyond what we consider the institution in secular terms. But it's not. Basically, it comes down to this self-perpetuation. And so all of the programs that you see are to promote itself. And you'll see, I mean, you go places and they talk about the church, sometimes at the cost of losing track that it belongs to Jesus Christ, right? Talk about the church and how we have to continue the church. And what I shared with you a few minutes ago, it's about that outreach versus inreach. We talk about perpetuating or continuing the church as an institution by doing inreach, by let's find people, let's donate, let's make sure the bank balances are okay so that it can continue to be around. And I don't need anybody to confirm this. I've seen it firsthand. Many, many, many churches that live based on this theory. A couple of years ago, I shared it with you too. We went on a pilgrimage and we went to a church where millions of dollars were in their bank accounts. And we were told that, you know, it has millions of dollars. In fact, so much that it doesn't even need to do fundraising. And thank God that they have more coming in than going out. And I remember one of the guys that was with us, well, why don't you have more things to do so that there is more money going out? Very early in my ministry, I was in Walnut Creek. There was a church, an American Protestant church. It was one of those, you know, big warehouse kind of churches. And I remember their model. They started the year with $2,000. They ended the year with $2,000. During the year, they collected millions of dollars. And by the end of the year, they were back down to $2,000. Why? Because they were not about saving that money, but it was about spending it. And they brought in millions of dollars to do these outreach programs by feeding the poor and the hungry and reaching out to different countries, third world countries, with their assistance. Now, whatever the case may be in your particular church, there are definitely outreach programs that can be done. And what I shared with you a few minutes ago is a lot of times by doing the inreach, by focusing in on our church, keeping our church alive, we forget that we have this outreach, which is part of the ministry of the church. And so instead of getting locked into that whole trap that we are just an institution, let's rise above that. And that's been really, let me say straight out, one of my downfalls. Okay, I believed that the church should be pure. And so when I haven't found it there, I've been disappointed. And I'm always reminded. In fact, it's so important for me that I've even written it out, and it's right across from me on my desk. Dr. King's statement, there can be no deep disappointment where there is not deep love. Yes, I am disappointed. I am very disappointed, but it's only because I do love this church. But I'm disappointed that we lost track. We have lost track. And part of what we do here in the next step is, what is that next step? Let's get back on the track. Let's point out what it is. And so through the years, we've tried to point that out, but sometimes you get frustrated because you realize, hey, you're just one man. And there is a hierarchy that you're dealing with, and you have to deal with this. Okay, so dealing with that, we then come to the next stage, as I was talking earlier, is that you accept it, the serenity prayer. Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Okay, I'm not going to change these things because, first of all, I'm not in a position. You got to remember, the Armenian Church has its hierarchy. There is a Catholicos, there are bishops, there are priests, there are deacons, and each one answers to a different level. And so this is part of the system. It's just like the military, right? You have a general and you have a private on the other end. In between, you have some captains, lieutenants, you have some colonels. Everyone has an order, a pecking order, so to speak. Well, and then you have the top one. You have the commander-in-chief, who is the president. So basically, yes, as you get higher up, you can do a lot more. You could effectuate more changes. But as you know, within the church, there are certain rules and regulations. And once we're in it, you could say I could walk out of it, which I choose not to. I love that church, and I realize that part of that church is that hierarchy. So I'm trying to work within it. And have tried to. Now, is that disappointing? Absolutely. There are disappointments, but there is also deep love. So realizing that there is this acceptance value, here's the question. What is the problem with that? Well, think about it for a moment. Once you accept it, you're living the lie. And that's the problem with it. Because you realize that you're not being true to yourself. And here, I think, is a major dilemma for many priests. You realize that you've been given this life. This memento mori comes into play. You are going to die. And whereas when you're making tons of money and wealth and somebody says that you are going to die, you realize that, okay, person who ends with the most toys still dies. In the case of a clergyman, when you've given your life to that cause, to that church, you realize that at the end, you need to stand before your maker and be able to account for what you did with that those days that he gave you. Did you feed the poor? Did you give drink to the thirsty? Did you clothe the naked? Did you visit the sick? Did you console those in prison? Did you care for those who are mourning? Did you just reach out instead of reaching in? Did you get rid of the I and talk about the we? Talk about others. And this is what it comes down to. And so as we move to the next step, each week, we start developing. And I needed to share this with you because that dilemma and that problem is a very real one for me. And I want you to understand where we are because many of you have been on board from the early years of the next step. And we've been through a lot. We go through a lot. And now we're at a point where we realize that, okay, we have to be true to ourselves. We cannot live that lie. And so what is the next step? Where do we go from here? I've had people, some very close, who come and talk to me about just the mannerisms in the church. You know, I was in Armenia about a month ago, month and a half ago. There is a church in the middle of Yerevan called St. Anna's. It's a beautiful church, brand new. It's, I'd say, 3 or 4 years old. And there is a sign in front of the church about the do's and don'ts. And it's all icons. No, no, not church icons. Those little cautionary icons, you know? The guy on the skateboard with an X through him. Like, do not skateboard in church. I really don't know if that's a problem, but apparently it is. There's a sign there. There's a sign, no gum chewing. Yeah, it's a guy chewing. It's a face chewing, and then there's a big X there. And it's, I could say on that sign, you know what, if I have it, I'll put it on the show notes, because I do remember taking a picture. I could say maybe there's about 25 different pictures on that sign. Don't do that. Do not cross legs. That's a big popular one, right? No shorts in the church. No loud talking, okay? So it's a guy with his mouth open and a big X over it, okay? But there is only one do And it's really kind of wild. Out of the 25 pictures, every picture except for one has an X over it. Do not do this. Do not do this. What is the one do? It's a woman wearing a headscarf. In other words, if you're a woman, wear a scarf. Do you remember I was sharing with you last week about the three-year principle? I think people just have too much time. And that's why you got to come to the realization that Christ gave us something very basic. And to communicate that, it's basically a three-year commitment that it's passed along to you. Now, what do you do with that? You can't keep going on forever. I have people that come up to you. Do you have Bible study? Well, what are you going to do with the Bible study? You know, it just irritates me. Of course we have Bible study. Do you know I've done Bible study every week for the past 37 years, except when I've been out of town. And on those days, we've always, now, I don't want to say always, there's been times where we've had to cancel, but we've, you know, for the most part, have always found an alternative. And not only have we done Bible studies, we've also done Vespers. And the Vespers are something that we write. In other words, in the church, in this 2,000-year-old church, we are writing new prayers, new means of delivery of the prayers. So this is very, very sacred to me. And so it's just kind of like a little bit too relaxed when people come and say, you have Bible study? Because it's just one of those questions that they're asking. I realized this just like a few years ago, by the way. I used to say, yeah, we do. You know, yeah, this is the date. Here's the thing. Now I realize that it's just one of those things that people ask. You see a guy with a collar, you realize he's a priest. Oh, do you have Bible study? The real question is, yeah, I do. Are you coming to it? Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's where you need the canned laughter, right? No, really. It's like there's some certain questions that we have, you know. How come the Armenian church doesn't allow women at the altar? The real question is, are you willing to give your daughter up for the service in the church? Or is it just one of those things that you wait for the priest to say, well, you know, my son, and then you go, ha, ha, ha. There's too much of that. Getting over that means you start taking it seriously. The cosmology becomes serious. And so the struggle that we have to reconcile the reality of the church now comes into play, okay? There is a reality that the church is those 25 icons with one of them that is not crossed, wear that headgear. And I deal with that daily. And so in reconciling the reality of what the church is, because I know you go to the church, and what we talk about here on The Next Step becomes novel. In fact, we've had people who've left. And they've told me, Father Boskin, what you're talking about is great, but we don't see it in our church. We've had others who just listen to it and say, yeah, this is what it should be. But they can't go to a church because it doesn't exist. And I think that I've done probably a little bit of a disservice. I don't want to take a lot of blame for it because I think it's important that we open up this dialogue. At least that's what I hear from you. But yeah, there is a disservice in that we've presented a church that doesn't exist. But it does. It's a virtual church, right? We are here. We are a church. You write to me. We pray for each other. We share. And we talk. And we communicate. And we are united in God. And in so doing, what we're doing is we're presenting the church without the hoopla, namely Armadoxy. Because at the end of it, we all die. At the end of it, momento mori. At the end of it, we have to give an account. And we have to feel comfortable. So can you feel serene? You have asked God to give you the serenity to accept the things that you cannot change. Okay, that serenity is there. But now how do you deal with the reality? I mean, you've given yourself, you've done all this, and now you realize that you're accepting something that you don't want to accept. And I don't have an answer except for the same answer that we found in the Gospels, the same answer that Jesus Christ found after giving his life, giving love, compassion, and everything he had. He's up on a cross, looking down on humanity and realizing that this is not the way it should be. But what does he say? Father, they don't know what they're doing. And I think in that we have the answer to what we're looking for, and really the answer to memento mori. In the end, we all die. Are we at peace with what we have done? The serenity to accept the things that we cannot change. Now, there is a big world. There's a big institution. There's a big church. But in the end, are we comfortable with who we are, with what we've done? And if you look at the last few next steps, I've been leading in this direction, especially when I shared that, you know, it's okay to be cafeteriaing in a church. Contrary to what people tell you, you know, oh, you can't be cafeteria. No, you, all of Christianity is basically a cafeteria experience. Taking what works, and in the end, are you able to feel comfortable with the life that you have, with the life that you've been dealing? And this is where self-introspection, and this is why, to me, one of the most beautiful parts about the Armenian Church, all of Orthodoxy, are these periods of looking in, evaluation, and then in so doing, to reach out to the community. The in and out, the yin and yang, the completion, gadarumen orinatsen yev markadets, the completion of the laws and the prophets, and we find that in Jesus Christ. He gives us that example on the cross, and it's the one that, really, it's the only one that makes sense, the only one that we can lean on. So, some thoughts for you. A priest who's dealing with this day in and day out, a priest who deals with the realities and tries to line them up with many of the ideals that we have. And by no sense, stretch of the imagination, am I the only one. Spoken to many priests, and there are many who deal with this. But the thing is that I don't want to be unhappy. I don't want to be complaining about it if I'm not doing something about it. I feel like through in issues, through the next step, through this ministry that we have, Armedoxy, we are bringing the Armenian Church, stripping it of the hoopla and understanding the beautiful and compassionate soul that it has deep underneath. Oh, and this piano player comes in right at the right moment, doesn't he? Here's Susie. I'll be back in a couple moments.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's next step with Father Vazquez.
We are gearing up for our 600th episode coming up in a couple weeks and looking forward to it. Yeah, we are at 596 today. So I guess in just about a month, we will be producing our 600th episode of The Next Step. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to include some of your comments. So when you do write, I want you to just add an addendum that it's okay for me to read your comment on our podcast. I'd love to hear what The Next Step means to you, what it's done for you, how you listen, what you appreciate, what you don't appreciate. I'd love to hear it. And I don't know about the don't appreciate. No, I'm kidding. I'd love to hear whatever you got out there, okay? So that's coming up in a few weeks. Let's see, we've got a lot of programs that are going on because we're getting close to the Advent season. And you know, In His Shoes Ministries does a lot on the local level and on the international level. On the local level, we have our toy drive. We have our children's memorial. On the international scene, we're hoping to be partnering with FLY, Freedom Loving Youth, and reaching out to the families, especially the kids that are still living in deplorable conditions in the earthquake zone. You say, what earthquake? 1988, over 31 years ago. Earthquake rattles Armenia, and here we are. 30 years later, people living in deplorable conditions. If you get a chance, check out my Facebook page. I have some video clips that they've posted. So we're hoping to partner, and I'll have more information for you on this next week. We're having a meeting and should finalize all of our work, and I share that with you because it's a very worthwhile project. They help kids not only in Armenia but also in Syria, and you know how tragic and complicated the situation is there. So we'll have a link on today's show notes, but more coming in the next few weeks. Well, that about does it for us, wraps it up. You know, we are on all the socials. You could follow us, and of course at the mothership inhisshoes.org. I am really having a rough time because as we approach number 600, I have made that a personal goal to do some switch arounds, and I'm having a rough time because we're lacking space, we're lacking the resources, but we are not lacking the prayers. So I need you to keep praying for us. Drop me lines. Those messages, those prayers, they go a long way in giving us help, support, and really boosting the ministry that we're doing. I want to thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed today's show. It's a little bit of a cathartic show today, if I do say so myself. Kind of like I had to share what I go through and share it with you, my listeners. On behalf of our producer, Susie, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Vosgen, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with The Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, The Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take care. Rascal out!